Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, episode 55, and I'm your host, Nick Ortigo. How a barber shop is going above and beyond to help with literacy just announced the Department of Education is about to be downsized. And are more colleges on the verge of doing away with requiring ACTs and SATs? Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each week, we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education. Plus, we speak with a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This week, part two of our interview with Hamish Brewer, the relentless principal that's disrupting the norms of school leadership with unlimited field trips and skateboard giveaways. Hello, everybody. Nick Ortigo here, and I'm joined by teacher extraordinaire, Lissa Pruitt. Lissa, how you doing?
I'm great.
Russ has the day off, but I know you've been busy setting up your new classroom. How's that going?
It's going. I'm heading to paint it today. I'm going to paint the walls and paint a mural.
So basically, you're going to go in and show up everybody with your awesome murals.
Not at all. I am going to set an atmosphere for creativity.
Okay.
But then the other teachers
will be like, thanks, Lissa.
Whatever. I'm the art class. They don't expect their class to look like
that's
mine.
That's true. That's a good point.
But let me tell you what I have been doing is playing some ping pong.
Ping pong?
Yes.
At school?
No, at my house in the neighborhood. We've got a circuit going. And it's definitely the summer thing is ping pong.
Wow. Are you good?
I'm not bad. Like, for an old lady, I'm not bad. Like, I've played some other ladies
in
the neighborhood and I'm better.
What do you think? Could you beat me?
I mean, I feel like I might. I've beaten grown men.
Can you beat Russ?
I have no idea. I feel like probably not. I feel like
Russ
probably knows.
You think Russ is good at ping pong?
I think he knows some table tennis. I don't know why. But I have...
Pickleball, maybe?
I have beaten some grown men, so I'm like, okay, it makes me feel like I've got a little moxie.
Wow.
You know?
Wow, we might need to settle this. I don't think it'd make good podcasting, though, just to listen. It might for like 5 seconds, the sound, but no one would want
to. No, you don't need to mic me up. You would hear some inappropriate things. That gets,
wow.
I get really competitive. It'd be like an NFL sideline
like
mic.
In front of your kids, huh?
There were no kids there.
Okay. All right, let's jump into the teacher's lounge before I get you in trouble. What do you know?
I love this story.
Yeah, feel-good story. Huh?
Yes. There's a barbershop in Ann Arbor, Michigan called the Fuller Cut, mm-hmm. and they are part of what seems to be kind of a nationwide growing kind of literacy effort in hair salons to give a $2 discount to children that read a book to their barber while they're getting their hair cut.
That's brilliant.
I know. And so little guys head in there. They want to get, this is a mohawk that this specific story speaks of. He wants to get, the little boy says it's like faded on the sides and high on the top. And there's diagonal lines.
Right.
But, which is all great. But the parents say, no, we like it because they're required to choose a book from mm-hmm. a selection that actually they go on to say is geared towards the demographic of the children that are coming there for haircuts.
Right.
And then they choose the book and they have to read it aloud to their barber. And what makes it different about, you know, it says that this is spreading across the nation, but Ryan Griffin, this barber, he says he quizzes the kids after, you know, because he knows all the stories because
right.
they have a selection of books. And so he'll ask them questions for comprehension.
Like, were they really,
listening? Yeah. And so it's a great program. And then at the end, the kids get $2 off of their haircut handed right to the child. Here's your $2.
I would consider, like, bringing my child to this place way over another place.
Absolutely.
Just for this.
Like, right. And that's what, I mean,
not just
that's
for the discount.
What the parent interviewed said, you know, my child comes because he really loves this haircut that he can get, this mohawk, and he's getting school ready and whatever. But the parents all there, they all say, there's lots of places to get our children's haircut, but we choose this one because of the literacy efforts that they're making. The teachers have even come out to congratulate the barbers to say, like, you don't understand, you know, a strong male role model mm-hmm. to have children read aloud to them and to correct, you know, help them along through a word that they're having a hard time with. Even older students, fifth and sixth graders
right.
are part of this program. So the teachers are saying, this is huge. Like, this makes it matter.
Well, and first off, reading aloud
is such a good skill because it's not just reading. Like that aloud part,
right?
That's crucial for so many things, podcasting, but just like, you know, giving speeches. So later in life, and then just the poise and the composure that it takes to be able to read aloud, that's something that everyone should really practice.
Right. Yeah. So they said that, you know, sometimes kids will choose the same book just because they get more fluent and more confident at reading aloud, because that is sometimes a worry for a child. But the parent that was interviewed said that, you know, he'll say to his child, you know, don't pick something too easy, you know, challenge yourself, pick something different this time. So it's just really, I just think it is such a neat program. And if you have a local hair salon that you think would partake in this, they totally should.
Russ's mission when he asked us to do this podcast, like his goal was to find little ideas like this and hopefully spread the word to other people. And this is something that, you know, anyone can do.
Right. So, you don't have to be in education to do this.
And it really does take a village. So hopefully someone hears this, and even if they don't cut hair, they know somebody who does because they get their hair cut, and they're going to go to him and be like, hey, you know what? Here's an idea for you. This is what you need to do. And it spreads because there's nothing bad about this. This is great.
Right. All you're losing is $2 to a child. And that's what they say is so fun is when the kids get handed $2. They're like, yes, made money off this haircut.
And I would argue that business is up even though they reduced
absolutely.
The $2.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
Okay. I don't often ask for you guys to admit that I'm right, but I just want to say I told you so with this next story. Remember when we talked about the Department of Education? Remember when Betsy DeVos, is it DeVos or DeVos?
I say DeVos. I don't know. Right. Tomato, tomato.
Remember when she had the bad 60 Minutes interview? And I kind of made the point. I was like, you know, I really feel like President Trump just isn't interested in the Department of Education. Like his whole goal is basically to
shut it down.
To shut it down. Mm-hmm. And there's been a history of a lot of other politicians, typically Republican, who have openly said, like, we feel like it's wasted government money. Well, announced yesterday, the White House to propose merging the labor and the education department into one agency. So basically, the goal is to make the education department smaller, still existing, but smaller, and by merging those two departments together. My question is, do we need a Department of Education? And is this a horrible thing? Little history. It was created by President Carter, so we're talking late 70s. So we haven't always had one, but we have had one basically probably in full functioning mode from early 80s till now.
Well, and I know we talked heavily about this before, whether do we need one or not, and the, you know, mismanagement of funds and how states have their own local control. But, you know, there are, I think if some of the federal programs are still in effect that were started, you know, some of the nationwide blanket procedures are still in effect. I can and still enforced by local states. I can see where maybe it is okay to kind of downsize the amount of personnel working. You know, almost like I kind of view it as almost like a child learning to ride a bike and they have training wheels and then they get the hang of it and then you take the training wheels off, you know? So I do think that some of the programs that were set forth and funded by the nation, if they're still funded by the nation but they're enforced by the state, I can see where it's okay to take those training wheels off and the state's going to carry on what you started as long as you're continuing to fund some of those programs and projects.
I mean, I guess in my mind, the Department of Education's probably most important role, and Russ could probably speak more eloquently to this. Unfortunately, he's not here.
He's going to be like, ah!
Yeah, but it's the whole monitoring of like civil rights probes and making sure things are done fairly and evenly across the board.
Right, and I think they would still do that, But it does take a lot of work and personnel to initiate certain programs and to make them, you know, alive and well in all of the states and schools.
Right.
But I do think they are alive and well in all of the states and schools. And I do think they are enforced. And so if we're just checking up and making sure and, you know, does that make sense? Then I can see where maybe a downsize is not that bad. They're not doing away with it, right?
Not at this
They're
point.
They're just downsizing.
You know, is it foreshadowing? I mean, and what I don't like to see, though, is as we change administrations over every 4 or 8 years.
It yo-yos.
And it's
kind
of like,
think that's
and you don't want to see bloated bureaucracies, of course. So, I mean, I guess There is a balancing effect, but you also do want an organization to have a mission and an understanding of what their goal is, right, and not to be ripped back and forth by politicians.
I agree. I don't want to see that either. But we do see it on the state level a lot.
Right. I mean, we always forget whether it's Department of Education or EPA or any government organization, there's people who work there who they may have partisan beliefs, but they don't really do their job in a partisan way. They're trying to do what's right for their mission, which in this case is going to be children and schools and education. Right. So worth watching. We'll have to see how that plays out.
Well, you did tell us so.
I saw it coming. So the other story I wanted to bring up actually has to do with the SAT and ACT. And there's been a lot of you've got a face.
It just makes my blood boil just to hear the words. Sorry.
Well, there have been some private and smaller schools, liberal arts colleges, that have done away with the SAT and the ACT for qualifying. Well, just announced this week, the University of Chicago becomes the first elite college to make the SAT and the ACT optional for applicants. Is this a good thing?
I think it's a good thing.
Really?
And there will be,
I'm not saying otherwise. I just didn't think you'd be there.
Well, you can line up 10 teachers that would stand right behind me, and you can line up another 10 that are all wonderful teachers that would say, nah, you know, we need it. So I just feel like, and I guess I look at this as a parent and a teacher. So I feel like not everybody is going to shine on the assessments. And I personally know students that struggle to get a qualifying score, but they're hardworking students and they have something to offer society that can be measured and taught in a college. And so it's a shame that they may miss out on a certain major that they're going for at a university, but they can't get in.
Right.
You know, I don't like the idea where people say, and this is out there and it's ugly, where people think, well, if you can't make over a 17 on the ACT, you don't need to go to college. You need to just find a trade and go out there, you know.
That's pretty harsh.
And it is. And it's very blanket. It's just a very generalization. And that's not fair ever. So why should it be fair based on a test? I don't think that's fair. There's a lot of people that I do think don't test well because of certain learning disabilities or, you know, ADHD or just, the time restraint. If they would take away the time restraint with the ACT and SAT, then I would say, fine, keep it as a qualifying factor.
Referring back to Joe Bowler, who we had on the show two or three episodes back, the professor from Stanford University, who is an expert in math education, she pointed out that there are great mathematicians who do math slow.
Absolutely.
And there's some of the best mathematicians in the world.
Because you have to be so careful. That is my major problem with these standardized tests, is the time restraints. And the only reason they have the time restraints is because they have to employ people to be there to issue the test. So if you have somebody that's going to take 6 hours on a test, then you have to have somebody monitoring that. And you're not supposed to release the other students because that's disruptive to release the other students, and it causes panic. So that's why that is why they have the restraints, and that bothers me. As a math teacher, yes, you have students that take longer, but you know what? They do it just the same, and most of the time they're checking and rechecking. So here you as a teacher are constantly teaching your children to check and recheck their math. And then on the ACT, they're not allowed to, you know, like that's, they're conditioned. Math is one of those things that you're conditioned to do this, then this, then this. And if you do that every time, that machine's going to crank out the right answer. And then you get on the test and you can't go through those steps that you have methodically been doing. So I think that it's a good thing. Good for Chicago. Good for them, you know, to say, because I bet you know what's going to happen. They're going to have more people enrolling. They're going to have more opportunities for people. And they're going to realize that, oh, you know what? That one test, you know, for somebody that is ADHD. Because this is what happens. If you really look at people's scores, and I can say this as a teacher and as a parent, you will see that they have spikes. Like you know, my child, for example, made a 30 on the reading portion. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really hard, you know. Yeah. He made a 30 on the reading portion, but then you look over at his math and he made a 20. But right. then he took it again and he made like a 28 on the math. And then yeah. he made a 20 on the, right. the reading. You know, it just yo-yos. Yeah. And it's not right. Yeah. To let that be the deciding factor. I just don't think.
Well, and I think from a business standpoint, other schools may have to follow suit. If you compete with Chicago University and you find that it does increase enrollment,
right.
you may see somewhat of a cascading effect. Hey, the bright idea last week, that guy, Hamish Brewer, he got you pumped up, right?
Yes.
And you know what I loved what he said? It's like it was one of the coolest things. And he talked about it in the podcast, and we had video of him actually doing it. But on the morning announcements, he gets on the loudspeaker and he says to his students, "If somebody today didn't tell you they love you, Mr. Brewer is telling you today he loves you."
Aww.
And it's really cool, you know, like because he knows, he understands that a lot of these kids may not have somebody who tells them that. So he, as the principal, does. And the interview was so great, I asked him to actually come back again for this week and continue the conversation. And we talked about how he changed Occoquan School over in Virginia. Now we're going to talk about how he switched to a different school, another challenge, and how the process is of turning that school around as well. All right, continuing our conversation from episode 54, we've got Hamish Brewer, the principal out of Northern Virginia, who has a unique leadership style. He rides skateboards through the hallway. He hands out skateboards. He changes the light bulbs. He goes to unlimited field trips, and he has had a lot of success doing that. In fact, he had a bunch of success over at Occoquan, and he has since transferred to Fredlin Elementary. I guess that was just about a year ago. And I want to start with you, Hamish. Welcome back to the show. I want to start with you and talk about how your leadership came to you. Did they say, "Hey, you know, great job at Occoquan. We want to send you to this other school"?
Yeah, no. I expressed an interest in making a change. I was ready for a new adventure. Wanted to take on some new challenges, and just the timing was right for me. I think we'd accomplished so many great things where I was, and I felt like it was just time for me to explore another opportunity. And so I put my name forward and I interviewed for the position, and worked out great.
What anxieties did you have about switching schools? Any?
Well, you know, the anxiety was giving up what you have, right? Like giving up a nationally distinguished school, one of the top ranked schools in the country with some of the highest results in the country. You know, it was scary giving that up. But at the same time, I'm full of it. I'm not who I say I am if I don't go and take on my school, Fredlin Middle School. Like, who am I to preach change and be a game changer, be the relentless skateboarding tattooed principal? Who am I to be this thing that's inspiring everybody and then not go and do the work? It's kind of like there's lots of people out there right now that are social media famous, or they're Twitter heroes, things like that, or they're writing and selling books and they ain't done the work. Like, who am I to say who I am if I don't go and do that work? So it was important to me. It was my community. I wanted to be the difference in that community. So many people had failed before me or hadn't quite got been able to help move the dial and get the school going in the right direction. And I'm like, if anyone's going to do it, I am. And who am I if I don't go and do something about it? That's my community. That community loves me. They trust me. And I had to put my hand up and put my hand in the pot and say, it's go time. Bring me on. Let's go.
You know, I've watched some of the video. You are honest with the students. You get in front of them in the school assembly setting and you tell them that the people in the community have a negative outlook on the school. I mean, those may not be your exact words, but you're pretty much honest and say, you know, they don't necessarily believe in us.
You know what they say? There's lots of fights. There's lots of trouble. Well, we're going to change that. We don't want nobody talking about our school a certain way no more. We are not here to be average. We're here to be amazing. Does everybody understand? And by the way, you have to be the change.
It's the truth. You know, people were having a lot to say about our school, my students. They were making assumptions. They were making generalizations. And a lot of people had something to say about my school that didn't know my school. You know, we had a lot of students that were going to other schools because they didn't want to go to my school. That's changed. We've turned around a huge transfer rate. We've turned around the populations. We've turned around the whole thing. But going back to your question, this is what I'm going to tell you. You know, everybody's got something to say about my kids, but my kids. And I told my kids, and I challenged my school, challenged my teachers, challenged my students. I said, let's rise up. And so we had the mantra. Our mantra for the year was rise up. Let's go. Let's show the world. Let's make some noise and show the entire world what we're about. Our backs are against the wall. Let's come out fighting and let's show everybody what we can do, because my kids are not a label. Poverty is not a learning disability. And we've done it before and we're going to do it again. And we're going to show everybody that had something to say about us that we can do great things. And you know how we finished up at our graduation? I hope I'm not getting too far ahead, but we finished our graduation. We dropped the mantra of rise up and we announced on the spot in that auditorium in front of over 1,000 people, thousands of people there, because it filled a whole high school. We said, we're back. We're back and we're here to stay. And now we're coming for everyone. We're coming for number one. We're going to be the number one ranked middle school on the planet next.
That's incredible. Now, what did you do different? Have you learned from, you know, your past experiences? And did you change anything when you went to Fred Lynn?
Nah, you know what I did, man? I repeated the recipe. We got rid of all the junk. We got rid of all the extra stuff. We simplified the process. We got back to teaching. We set an expectation. I put my office in the middle of the school. We changed the environment. We're going deskless. We changed the light bulbs out. We put inspiring murals up. We started inspiring kids. We held kids accountable. Kids like structure. Kids like targets. Kids like being set goals. We respected our kids. They respected us back. And we attacked discipline head on. We had a lot of issues in hallways and after school, before school, and transition. And we had to make sure our kids were available for learning. So you know what we did? We attacked that availability head on. We made some non-negotiables in our building. Like, we're going to stand outside our door in the corridor on every transition, every single one of us, all in or not at all. And so we did things like that, and we completely wiped out the discipline problem, completely destroyed. There is, you know, we're a middle school with 1,200 kids. Stuff happens. But we've completely eliminated the discipline problem. Our kids are available for learning. Our kids are taking pride in their work. They left on the last day crying. Kids at our school, teachers said, kids at our school had never left school crying on the last day.
You know, you said you moved your office to the middle of the school. What message are you trying to send by doing that?
I'm trying to say to them that their business is my business. My business is their business. That I'm available, that I'm there for them, that I'm visible, that I'm in the middle of everything, that I'm up in the middle of their stuff, that they can't turn around without me being there to support them, hold them accountable, and be right there in the thick of action. And that was a message not just for students, but for adults also. I sent a message to the adults that I got your back, that I'm all in, that I'm going nowhere, that you have to know who your principal is, and your school goes as I go. I set the expectation. I set the standard. And I'm going to model it. I'm going to be it. And, you know, I painted my whole front door of my office, and it's got all in tag graffitied up. I'm a big hip hop graffiti skateboarding guy. Love that stuff. And you know what? I stood behind my door when it first went up. I listened to the kids come by, and you know what they said? They said, he's going nowhere. He's not leaving us.
Yeah.
And so I sent them a clear message that I was going nowhere, that I was here to stay, and I had their back. Now I have a skateboard rack outside it too, and I give away those skateboards once a week.
So you give them away, like, just use them for the weekend? How's that work?
No, they get to keep it. So nice. I purchase skateboards. I give them a skateboard because I give it to kids that have worked hard, set goals, and the kids are always trying to earn them. And then I also give them out to kids that just need to pick me up. They need some love. They need to be showered in some love, taken care of, and given a voice. So I give them out for a pick me up, and I give them out for kids that have worked hard, set goals, and can prove it and can show it. You know, like, I don't give out trophies because you came to school. You know, you had perfect attendance. Our job is to come to school. Our job is to bring it every day. I'm not going to give you a reward or a trophy because you behaved today. That's our job. That's the expectation. That's what we're chasing greatness for. We're not here to be average. We're here to be great. Life ain't going to give you a handout. So, and then one of my favorite skateboard giveaways was this. I had this teacher reach out to me saying, I love your skateboard giveaway. I've got a kid up here in Massachusetts that would love a skateboard. He's into skateboarding. He's been down, needs a pick me up. You know what I did? I DM'd the lady. I said on the side, hey, hit me up. Let me know your address. I sent that kid a skateboard.
Nice.
And then that kid's skateboarding around. They sent me some video, and the teacher said they've never seen that child smile so much.
That's like, touching.
Remember, schools are built for kids.
Right.
You know, they're built for adults. It's not the, you know, we get into this mistake of it being like Star Wars and the evil empire where it's like Darth Vader versus Luke Skywalker. Man, we got to be the light side. We got to be like the ninjas for everybody. You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm a principal. I'm hearing you. I'm hearing the energy. I want to do this. But I also know as a principal, I've got to spend a lot of time dealing with the budget and HR issues with my staff. I don't have time to go door to door and see all these kids and visit all these classrooms. What do you say to somebody with that perspective?
You know what? I say it's unacceptable. I say it's not okay. Leaders lead. I still got to do all those things too.
And how do you do it?
I have to do it, but I've created a culture and ownership for everybody. That's the difference. Like when you build capacity, I became a great leader when I realized I need to empower the people around me to make decisions. Decisions in great organizations are made from the front lines, not the back offices. And I put the power in the hands of my students and my teachers. And we did it jointly. We did it together, and people were valued. I valued their time. For instance, everybody does these staff meetings. Everybody's meeting and meeting and meeting. Nothing's getting done. The same non-actionable items come out of every meeting. Look around. How many meetings did you have to have a meeting on the meeting on the meeting, and nothing came of it? Stop the madness. Value your teachers' time. Value your teachers. Empower them to be professionals. Empower them to own their school.
I know you do some speaking now, probably some type of professional development. Can you teach the X factor that you have? You know, what do you tell people? How do you motivate them?
Here's what I'm going to tell you. Every educator has the X factor. Because you know why? Remember that first day and the why you got into teaching. You wanted to impact children. Never forget why we got into teaching. We got into teaching because we wanted to be the difference for children. That's the X factor. We all have that. We just got to remember that's the why, that's the focus. You know, and it's scary because today some of the real issues are we're not giving people a reason to get into education. I think we have an identity crisis right now in education, because what people are hearing is not the fact that we're here to change the lives of children, but you're going to be a teacher, you're going to work long hours, you're going to do lots of paperwork, and you're not going to get paid very much. We have to change that perception, because it's a bad perception right now in education. We have to turn back the clock and get people back into education, reminding them that we're making the difference in a child. We're changing the outcome for a child. That's the X factor, and everybody has it. We just got to choose to ignore it or do something about it. It's opportunity versus obligation. If you're teaching out of obligation, then you got to go. Because every day is an opportunity. I tell my folks all the time. I tell principals. I tell teachers this all the time. There's three things that matters: choosing your attitude, having fun, and making somebody's day. And when you look in the mirror, you have to be prepared to have the conversation between you and you, because you're the only one that can answer the question, did you bring it today? Did you bring it today for children? Were you the difference in the lives of children and the people around you? And so that's what I ask people all the time. Did you make a difference? And I'm just going to tell you right now, every decision I make, I'm making, and I say, was I better for children today? Did I bring it for children today? Because here's what I'm going to tell you. I am not negotiating on my kids. My kids are not a negotiation. My job is to be the very best principal on the planet for those kids and be the difference for them each and every day. And culture doesn't take breaks. Everybody's on summer vacation. I'm on summer vacation, but I'm still bringing it for my kids. I'm preparing, I'm planning, I'm cleaning, I'm doing all the things I need to do to be great again for kids. Everybody's like, how are you going to start the year? I'm going to start the year like it's still December. Like we're picking up where we left off. Nothing changes. The expectation didn't change because it's a different year. The expectation is that we're bringing it again. You know, culture is not about what it looks like in August and September. It's what it looks like all year round. Culture doesn't take a day off. It doesn't take breaks.
Principal Hamish Brewer, your energy is infectious. I appreciate it. I'm really excited to hear what you have for our pop quiz. Are you ready?
Let's go. Shoot.
All right. If students could only go to school for one subject, which subject should it be?
Communication. One of the number one skills in the world today that our kids need when they leave school today is the ability to communicate. They live and work and operate in a world that is based on the ability to communicate.
What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
We're not teaching enough communication. We're not teaching them a skill set. We're getting away from critical thinking and problem solving and authentic learning experiences that enhance those skill sets.
What does every child deserve?
The most amazing teacher under the tree. Every child deserves the opportunity. Every child deserves to be believed in by somebody. Every child deserves that.
What's the biggest challenge for today's educators?
The biggest challenge for today's educators is staying focused on the things that mean the most and not being taken away from their critical, most important thing that they do each and every day, which is teaching.
What's the best gift to give an educator?
Dry erase markers. Can never have enough.
All right. And which teacher changed your life?
I think it was the teachers that built relationships with me. In New Zealand, where I grew up, teachers would teach our sports and Saturday sports. They would be with us for a lot of extra hours after school, before school. I think it's the teachers that invested in us that way. They invested in everything that we do. The whole person, the whole child, everything.
Last question, pen or pencil?
My folks would probably tell you I'm neither.
It's a dry erase marker, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
All right, again, Hamish Brewer, we appreciate your time. If anyone wants to catch up with you or book you for speaking, they can find you, I guess, at relentlesslearning.com. You're on Twitter at BrewerHM. And where else again? You're on Facebook and Instagram?
Yeah, Facebook, Relentless Learning, and Instagram at Relentless Principal. And here's what I just want to finish by saying. Thank you for the opportunity. Any chance I get to share and inspire people and give them one idea to take away and just be a little bit different than they were today. That's what it's about, being the difference and being a game changer for every single child.
Well, I love what you have to say, and I really feel like your message isn't just necessarily tailored for schools. I think anyone in management can probably learn a lot from what you have to say. So
yeah, appreciate it.
Thanks again for your time. That's going to do it for this episode of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you, so if you want to send us an idea or a comment, remember you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So if you like what you heard today, please be sure and hit that subscribe button, and we'd also love it if you'd leave us a 5-star review. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast or on Twitter. Just search for us by typing in Class Dismissed. On behalf of Russ with School Status and Lissa representing all the teachers out there, I'm Nick Ward. Go, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class dismissed.